Thank you, brother, for that prayer. Coming to an end of our study of 2 Corinthians. I hope it's been an encouraging study for you, that as we read 2 Corinthians, I think there's a lot of benefit to that. That one of those is it should help us to appreciate even more the work of men like Paul and Silvanus and Timothy in the spreading of the gospel. Work of the Apostle Paul in not only spreading the gospel to these churches, but all the things that he personally endured in order to do that. And that God has recorded for us these letters and preserved them through the ages that we can read and we can learn of them, but also learn about our brothers and sisters in Christ and the struggles that they had. Church at Corinth, of course, we think of when we think of Corinth as a church that had problems, and that's true. But there's also a lot to be encouraged by in their response to that. Paul's mentioned a number of good things already in this letter and how they had responded to his first letter, that Titus had been relieved when he came and saw how they were doing and brought back a good report to Paul. And yet there's still issues that Paul deals with in this letter. And so we learn a lot about that. We learn about responding to trials, the attitude that Paul and those with him had, and again, even how Corinth responded to a letter that was full of rebuke, that broadly they had repented. But he comes to this last section and he deals with those that are bringing charges or accusations against Paul. And he's dealt with that throughout the letter, but that's really a focus in chapters 10 to 13. But even in the midst of that, Paul expresses in a number of ways and explains in a number of ways his love for the church at Corinth. We see that relationship that Paul had with him, that concern that Paul had for these brethren, even as he deals with these things. And certainly that's a good example for us as well. And so we've spent a couple of classes, or a few classes now, going over the text, 10 to 13. Now we kind of go back over that again and review with these questions. So page 29, if you have the material, we'll go through these questions together. So, question one, what are some of the accusations against Paul in this chapter? Yeah, so there in verse 10, he quotes them, he says, they say this, so his letters are weighty and strong, there's this boldness in his letters, there's this strong presence in that, but personally he's nothing to look at, his speech is not good. What else in chapter 10? He walked according to the flesh. He says there's those that regard us as if we walked according to the flesh. And so there's some that have this view of Paul, that he walks according to the flesh. What else? It's kind of related to that in verse 10 where he quotes him, but he started in verse 1, I'm meek face to face, but bold when absent. So there was this idea that he was different when he was away. And so Paul writes these strong letters, but personally there's nothing special about Paul, that he's just walking according to the flesh. So Paul responds to these things. And specifically, he talks about those who regard us as if we walked according to the flesh. He says in verse 3 that though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. So what's the distinction Paul makes here? What's the difference between walking in the flesh and warring according to the flesh? For him, not according to the flesh. Yeah, deal in truth. Yeah. And so his ministry is engaged in this spiritual warfare. His weapons are spiritual. He's warring not according to the flesh, even though he's in flesh as a human. Their accusation is he walks according to the flesh. And so he responds to that. So contrast what some were saying about Paul and what he says about the warfare he was engaged in. How does he describe this warfare?
More of a spiritual warfare.
Yeah, certainly. Again, the spiritual warfare, he talks about the weapons are not of the flesh, but they're divinely powerful. Certainly nothing weak about that. They're divinely powerful, he says, for destroying of fortresses, or you might have the pulling down of strongholds, for destroying speculations, or you might have casting down arguments or imaginations, depending on your translation. They're destroying that, and every lofty or high thing that is raised up or exalted against the knowledge of God. And so he's responding to these things. He has these divine weapons, the spiritual battle. He's going to destroy these arguments, these ideas, these imaginations of men. They might say he's not bold, but certainly he's proving that he has these powerful weapons that he's using. Again, these are not according to the flesh. And with that, then he says, taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, and we're ready to punish all disobedience whenever your obedience is complete. That the accusation is he's bold when absent, but not when present. And he says that's not the case, that he's ready to punish all disobedience. And so here's this spiritual warfare that Paul's engaged in. He has these weapons that are divinely powerful, and he responds to these things. So then, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So destroying their arguments, destroying their reasoning by the or for the knowledge of Christ, bringing all things to the obedience of Christ. So he's not afraid to call them out. He's not afraid to point those things out. And when he comes in person, he's not afraid to punish them, to rebuke them, and do what's necessary to set those things right here in Corinth. Any other thoughts about that? What Paul has to say here about his war that he's engaged in. All right, 10 verse 7. What was the problem with the Corinthians' perspective? Yeah, they were looking at things outwardly. Again, this idea of looking at things according to the flesh, looking at things outwardly. And the solution is, he says this, if anyone is confident in himself that he is Christ's, well, they're claiming to be Christians. They'd be confident that they belong to Christ. He says, let him consider this within himself, that just as he is Christ, so also are we. So why would there be a division between them? If they're both in Christ, then there wouldn't be this tearing down. And so Paul tells them to look at this. Are you Christ's? If you think that you are just as he's Christ, so also are we. Now that had been proven to them. He's going to go on and keep showing that. Now, that had been demonstrated to them. But he certainly belonged to Christ as well. And so with that, what was the source of their authority? The source of their authority was the Lord. It wasn't that other men esteemed them. It wasn't that they had their authority from anywhere else. He talks about their authority was from the Lord. And he says it was for building you up and not for destroying you. And so Paul's going to use that authority to build up them, not destroy them. And he won't be put to shame in this. Yeah, certainly. Certainly we see many of these same things. And people argue in the way that they did. People accuse those that are servants of Christ in the same way even that they did. So here he points out the source of their authority. Again, he was warring this warfare. He had these divinely powerful weapons. That's from God. The power's from God. The source is from God. And here he says that's the same with his authority for the purpose of building them up. He says, I don't wish to seem as if I would terrify you by my letters. And then he goes right into that quote that they say his letters are weighty and strong, but his personal presence is unimpressive and his speech is contemptible. And so what does Paul then assure them concerning his words and his deeds? Verse 11. Yeah, they're the same. Such a person consider this, that what we are in words by letters when absent, such persons we also are indeed when present. And so won't take the time to read this, but we go all the way back to the beginning of, in chapter 1 where the accusations were lodged against Paul because he had changed his travel plans. He tells us there, and he has told us before, the reason that he hadn't come was to give them a chance to repent, to spare them from that. It wasn't out of weakness. It was giving them that opportunity. He's going to come back to that time and again. But certainly Paul was going to be bold if that was what was needed. And one of the things we talked about when we went through this in class was we looked at some examples of Paul's boldness. He demonstrated this time and again, that this boldness when present. And he says we're going to be the same when present as we are in our letters. He's going to disprove the accusations that were raised against him. Question number 4, what does Paul seem to indicate his accusers were doing? And why would he not engage in the same thing himself? Verse 12. Yeah, they were without understanding. He talks about this idea that they were comparing themselves to each other. They were using themselves as the standard. Look how great we are. Talked about one that had described that as a mutual admiration society, that they were just, that was their standard, was each other. And Paul says, we're not going to do that. We're not going to compare ourselves as they do. And the reason is because they're without understanding. They're ignorant in this. They're being fools by this very thing that they are doing. They're building themselves up. They're using themselves as the standard. They're praising themselves in that way. And Paul says, we're not going to do that. We're not like them that do this in ignorance without understanding. What's the point Paul then makes, question 5, about the sphere of his labor? It was the sphere that God had apportioned to them. So they weren't going outside what God had given them. And what did that include? Yeah, the faith of those that got taught the gospel. And that certainly included those at Corinth. That Paul was an apostle to the Gentiles. That he was sent here. That he preached the gospel to them. And so he's in his sphere. The sphere which the Lord had apportioned to him. And so Paul wasn't engage, or he wasn't invading on someone else's labor. This is the very work that God had given for him. And so, say that again. Yes. Yes. Yeah, they weren't boasting in something of themselves. They weren't boasting in someone else's labor. He talks about boasting only in the Lord. And so that's question 6. What does it mean to boast or glory in the Lord? Yeah, give the Lord the credit. You can't take credit for what the Lord has done. It's given as though it's Old Testament quotes. So perhaps from Jeremiah 9:23 and 24, this idea, other places in the Old Testament, Paul had mentioned this in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, 26 to 31. But it was, yeah, this idea that Paul wasn't going to boast in himself. He wasn't going to say, look at me and all that I have accomplished. He talks about giving the glory to the Lord. Certainly Paul did that time and again. In fact, he talked about in 1 Corinthians, I can't remember if it was 3 or 4, but where he talks about, probably 3, where he talks about him and Apollos, that I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. Ultimately, he says, we're nothing. Now, people were dividing over who had baptized them. People were dividing over who had taught them. But Paul gives the glory to the Lord. It's God that gives the increase. And so he who boasts, he should boast in the Lord. Again, unlike what his accusers were doing. They were boasting in themselves and comparing themselves with each other and saying, look at us and how great we are. And Paul certainly is responding to that. He's going to glory in the Lord. And so even when Paul goes on and he boasts about his weakness, he's not saying, look at me in this. He's pointing to the Lord. And that's the point that he's going to make a little bit later in the text. And so with that, verse 18, for it is not he who commends himself that is approved. Now, that's what these accusers were doing, comparing themselves among themselves, commending themselves. Well, it doesn't matter if one commends themselves. What's the standard? What matters? Yeah, it's who the Lord commends. And so Paul was focused on that. He was focused on the Lord's approval, not on the approval of men. And so, again, Paul has talked about this a number of times, but he makes the point in 1 Corinthians that ultimately, is I don't even judge myself insofar as the standard of what's right. He says God's the one that judges. God's the one that commends. And so he talked about in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, looking ahead to that judgment of Christ, he says we want to live right before God. We want to be approved by God, not by men. So you're not approved because you commend yourself. You're approved if the Lord commends you and approves what you are doing. Of course, the point is that Paul and his ministers, they're approved of God because they're doing the work that God has given them. Again, in opposition to those who are commending themselves. So what way has Paul demonstrated his approval and commendation from the Lord? For some of the things he's talked about, even just in this chapter. Yeah, these divinely powerful weapons, that certainly shows this idea of approval from God. What else? Certainly, kind of pointing them back to God as the standard. Verse 8, he talks about the authority which he has from the Lord. It was given for building them up. He talked about their sphere in chapter 13, the measure of the sphere which God apportioned to us as a measure to reach even as far as you. So in all of this, Paul is talking about approval from the Lord. So he is responding to these accusers. He's going to engage in some boasting to make a point, but in all of that, it's not about his own approval or even seeking their approval. It's about pointing toward the fact that he's approved of God. So he's going to demonstrate that in the chapters to come. Any other thoughts about this idea of the approval from the Lord? That we see that in Paul, his life, and in his letters, that it's always pointing back to Christ. It's always pointing back to God. It's always pointing back to that authority. And so we get into these chapters where Paul does engage in some boasting, this idea of defending himself. But what did Paul consider to be foolishness? Chapter 11 and verse 1. He talks about this jealousy that he has for them, this love and concern that he has for them, certainly. But he's going to give a defense here of his apostleship. He's going to engage in this idea of boasting. The kind of reasoning that he's about to engage in, he says, bear with me in this foolishness, that he's even going to compare himself to those that are false apostles. But he does that in this chapter. Question 2, how does Paul describe his relationship with Corinth? So Alex talked about this jealousy, this godly jealousy, and what's the image that he gives to demonstrate that or to show that? He goes on to talk about how they've been deceived. Certainly, that's his fear. But in verse 2, what's he say about his relationship? Yeah, he's the one presenting them to Christ. Or he's betrothing them to one husband. We see the church as the bride of Christ in Paul's writing, like Ephesians chapter 5. But here he says, I've brought you to Christ. I've brought you to him. Right? He was the one that presented to them the gospel. And they accepted it by faith. And they became Christians. And so he's the one that's betrothed them to one husband. It seems, at least to me, that he's talking about his relationship perhaps as a father, because he's talked about being their father in this, that he brought them to God. But either way, he's presented them to Christ. And so there's this godly jealousy that when they're turning away from that, they're being deceived like Eve was by the serpent. That's the concern that Paul has for them. So it shows, again, this deep love, this deep concern that Paul has. He's described himself elsewhere as their spiritual father, 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 15. But there's this relationship that Paul has. And so like Alex said, what was Paul's deep fear and concern for these brethren in verses 3 and 4? Yeah, that they'd be deceived like Eve was. He goes all the way back to the garden in Genesis chapter 3. And we can read of that, but we see that Eve was deceived by the serpent in the garden. Paul makes reference to that in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 14, and going back and pointing out this deception. And so Eve was deceived in the garden. So Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, the presence of God, this idea that they were there, they had the instruction not to eat of the tree, and yet the serpent comes along and says, "You shall not surely die." And she eats of that tree, then brings it to Adam, and he also eats of that fruit. But we see Eve was deceived by that, and Paul's concern is that Corinth would be like Eve, that they would be deceived by what? Yeah, false teachers. He talks about in verse 3 that if one comes and preaches another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or you receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, you bear this beautifully, or New King James says you may well put up with it. But his concern is that they'd be deceived by another Jesus, a different spirit, or a different gospel. The very thing that he wrote to the Christians throughout the region of Galatia, in Galatians chapter 1, and all throughout that letter, Paul talks about them being drawn away to a different gospel. In Galatians chapter 1 and verse 6, he says, "I'm amazed that you are so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel, which is really not another, only there are some who are disturbing you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to what we have preached to you, he is to be accursed. As we've said before, so now I say again, if a man is preaching to you a gospel contrary to what you received, he is to be accursed. For am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Or am I striving to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. For I would have you know, brethren, that the gospel which was preached by me is not according to man. For I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but I received it through a revelation of Jesus Christ." And so that's what he wrote to the Galatians, and similar language is used here. "My fear is that you've been deceived by this, that someone comes and preaches something different than what we delivered to you, that you would go along with it." So he says, you bear this beautifully, or you may well put up with it. That they might listen to those that preach something different than the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so Paul has this deep concern for them. Any comments or questions about that?
You mentioned the simplicity.
Yeah, the simplicity. And with that, the purity of it. So they've corrupted that, and that's going to draw them away from their devotion, that their single-minded focus upon their service to Christ. And so that's Paul's deep concern for them, that because of their immaturity, because of looking at things outwardly, because of all these other things, that they would listen to them, be drawn away from the simplicity and purity to Christ by a different Jesus, another gospel, and a different spirit than what they had received. And so they had received the truth that was demonstrated. He'll get to this in chapter 12. They'd seen the signs of a true apostle, and yet they might be deceived by these false teachers. And so question 4 under part C. What had Paul made evident to them concerning his teaching in relation to the most eminent apostles in chapter 11, verses 5 and 6? Yeah. And so certainly in no way inferior to the most eminent apostles. I think it's the ESV that puts their super apostles, talking about this idea of these people that set themselves up Those who profess to be apostles, they talk about how great they are. And Paul says, I'm in no way inferior to that, even if he's unskilled in speech. Now, some take that to mean he's admitting that he's unskilled in speech. And there's other references that might point to that. But his point, rather, is that even if that's the case, even if I'm unskilled in speech, like they accuse, he says, I'm not so in knowledge. So you can attack my speech. You can attack the way that I talk. But he says that there's no questioning the knowledge that he had, that knowledge that he had received from God by revelation, that gospel that he preached. There's certainly no denying that he had demonstrated that he indeed was an apostle, that he'd received this message from God. So verse 7, what seems to be, question 5, what it seems was implied about Paul, since he did not take support from the Corinthians. He asked it as a question. Did I commit sin in humbling myself that you might be exalted because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge? And so Paul didn't receive financial support from them for preaching the gospel. But looking both at this text here as well as what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, what are some of the reasons that Paul gave for not taking financial support from them? Yeah, so other churches were supplying that need. He talks about robbing the churches that he might be supported. What else? Yeah, not to detract from his message. Yeah, didn't want to be identified with those that he talks about peddling the word of God, chapter 2 and verse 17, that would just take the money. Yeah, he talks about other churches gave wages to him, and then he goes on to say, brethren came from Macedonia. He says, they fully supplied my need. Paul was fine taking money from them when they came. They supported him. What are some other reasons? Yeah, to not be a burden to them or to anyone. Yeah. Yeah, certainly. He talks about his love for them. Certainly he asked as a question, because I don't love you. God knows I do. The point is God knows his love for them. Going back to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, we won't go and read it for the sake of time, but there he talks about to not hinder the gospel and to win them to Christ. He humbled himself, didn't exercise his right to be as supported. And so there were a number of reasons that Paul did not take support, that there wasn't certainly any sin in that, and it was for their benefit. It was all for his concern for them. And so there's those that are now questioning him for not taking support, attacking his authority for that. But Paul gives these very good reasons why he didn't take support from the Corinthians. And so we talked about it here, but question 7, how was Paul supported while he was at Corinth? It took wages from other churches, and the Macedonians fully supplied his need. From Acts, when he first came, he was working with Aquila and Priscilla. They had the same trade as tent makers, so there was this idea of working with his hands to support himself. But we see he was supported by others. So he was supported by others, he supported himself, but he didn't take money from Corinth. Again, all for their benefit. And so now there's these accusations against Paul for not taking support, but why was he going to continue laboring among them without accepting their financial support? Yeah. And so we talked about his love already. He's going to continue this, but yeah, so he would cut off the opportunity for those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the matter in which they're boasting. And so he's going to continue this. He's cutting off that opportunity again. He is kind of shutting down these people. He's showing the error in their accusations. How does he identify them in verses 13 to 15? Yeah. So Paul's going to talk about he's demonstrated the signs of a true apostle. We get to that in chapter 12. But here he points out these, and again, I think this connects back to those that he said he's not inferior to, these super apostles, these most eminent apostles. He says, in fact, they're not apostles at all. They're false apostles. They're deceitful workers. He says they've disguised themselves as apostles of Christ. So that's what they're trying to appear to be. But what are they in reality? Apostles of Satan. He talks about this as no wonder Satan even disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end will be according to their deeds. And so when he says they're disguising themselves as apostles of Christ, they are servants of Satan who are purporting to be, claiming to be apostles of Christ. And so Paul calls them for what they are. So he identifies them here: false apostles, deceitful workers, servants of Satan, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. We talked about some of these and others about this use of irony and sarcasm on the part of Paul. And so just kind of briefly, let's go through these. He says, you bear this beautifully in verse 4. How's that an example of this sarcasm or irony? Yeah, this is the idea of shaming them, that you put up with this, you engage in this, you've rejected Jesus for this false, another Jesus, another gospel, another spirit. He says, I consider myself not in the least inferior to the most eminent apostles or super apostles. And I think when we connect it, when he goes on to call them what they are, they're actually false apostles, but they're purported to be apostles. And so Paul uses this, that they're super apostles. They're the most eminent apostles. And yet he shows the fallacy of that. Verse 19, we haven't got here yet, but he says, for you being so wise, tolerate the foolish gladly. There's that inversion. You're so wise that you put up with these fools. That certainly we see the inversion there, that if actually wise, certainly they would not have put up with these foolish accusers. To my shame, I must say that we have been weak by comparison. Again, we haven't got to this in our questions, but we've gone through it before. But one, it parallels back to the we're not bold to class ourselves or compare ourselves as those who commend themselves. But he goes on to say that in this section, that if the standard of strength is abusing Corinth and slapping them on the face like these false teachers, he says, then we're weak by comparison. If that's your measure, then we're weak. So we see these statements throughout as Paul calls these things out. So, as I said, there's others. These are just kind of a sampling of some of them that we see in the text. Any thoughts about that? Any comments about how Paul uses that? All right. Next section here, section D, Paul's reluctant boasting. 11, verse 16 to 19. Why does Paul excuse himself before boasting? And what made Paul's boasting necessary? Yeah, they were boasting in the flesh, and he's going to, even by kind of pointing to that, point out the foolishness of what they're doing. And so it's necessary in him to respond to these things, in part to get through to Corinth. They're putting up with these people and they're boasting, so let me appeal to that and see if you'll listen to that and get the point here. And so since Corinth had received these fools and they're boasting, Paul would boast a little to get his point across to them. So we talked about this a bit above. To my shame, I must say we've been weak by comparison. What kinds of things had they tolerated from these false apostles? Yeah. And so how does this compare to how Paul had treated them? Yeah, it calls it weak by comparison in the text here, but from then kind of what we know about Paul, what we've read about Paul, how did Paul act toward them?
He suffered for them. He was gentle towards them.
Yeah. Yeah, a number of times he gives that illustration as a loving parent, that he'd been as a father to them, that he'd been concerned about them in that way, that he had this love for them. And so here's these people they're putting up with that basically they're abusing them, enslaving them, devouring them, taking advantage, exalting themselves, hitting you in the face. Paul had not behaved in that way. Yes. Right.
These people there, they're looking at these super apostles who are coming at them with some approach that is the opposite of the approach that Paul brings. Paul brings this suffering, willing to endure for them, bear things through for them, not use his privilege to, receive funds for their purpose. And then on the opposite is these guys who are, he lists them off as, being harsh to them, right? And the Corinthians responded with interest to the harsh treatment as if they respected that and thought that that deserved attention and tolerating and they looked at Paul as if he wasn't coming harsh and strong.
Certainly. That these are the things, at least some of Corinth is kind of they're intrigued by these things. And certainly Paul, he makes the contrast here. So all through this, he's just making it in all of these different ways, this sharp contrast between the two and pointing out that he's not at all like that. But that doesn't mean that there isn't boldness. And so just because Paul doesn't abuse them in that way and take advantage of them doesn't mean that he's weak and that he's kind of unpowerful, impotent in that way. He says, no, in whatever respect anyone is bold, I speak in foolishness, I am just as bold myself. That Paul had demonstrated his boldness as well, even in showing love for them. Right? There's a way in which you can be bold and still be gentle and still be loving to someone, or you can be bold and it's all about this pride of self and taking advantage of and all of that. So Paul certainly, he responds to that. And so how does Paul compare to his accusers in 21 to 23?
Yeah.
You want to look at their, I think you said pedigree, right? This idea, their Judaism. He says, are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. Paul had talked about his Jewish background in a number of places, but we see how he looked at this in his letter to the Philippians. Philippians chapter 3, 4 to 6. He talks there he says, although I myself might have confidence, even in the flesh, if anyone else has a mind to put confidence in the flesh, I far more, circumcised the eighth day of the nation of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law a Pharisee, as to zeal a persecutor of the church, as to the righteousness which is in the law found blameless. But Paul goes on there to talk about, he counted these things as lost for Christ, he might gain Christ. So they want to talk about their Jewish background. This gives us some insight about who these accusers were. But Paul certainly could say even more about that in his own background. He says, they want to claim to be servants of Christ. I speak as if insane, I more so. And then spend several verses describing this suffering as a servant of Christ. And so this is that idea that he's putting up with this foolishness. They want to boast about these things. Well, let's go to task on this. Let's look at their background. Let's look at them as servants. And certainly Paul can demonstrate more so than them. Question 4, what does verse 22 reveal about who these false teachers were? Jewish, right? They talk about Hebrew, Israelites, descendants of Abraham. And so likely that means they were either the same people or the same type of people as those that Paul dealt with pretty much everywhere he went from the Jews, that were trying to draw people away from the purity that's in Christ. So what is the nature of Paul's adversities as a servant of Christ? And where can we read some of these events? Yeah, read about many of them in Acts. Many of them, though, we are told here. We don't read about them in Acts. There's even more than what we read in Acts, right? Luke didn't give an exhaustive day-by-day history in Acts. That wasn't the purpose of that. But we do read of many of these things in the book of Acts. But you were just to summarize this list of things. What did Paul endure? Yeah, suffering, right? He suffered as a servant of Christ in all of these different ways that he describes here. He talks about kind of the persecutions he received, talking about imprisonments, beatings, but also receiving lashes, beaten with rods, stoned, shipwrecked. But then also he talks about just the struggles of being one that traveled in the way to these frequent journeys, dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers. But then he had dangers from his countrymen, the Jews that followed him everywhere. He had dangers from the Gentiles. So it wasn't just the Jews. He had dangers in cities, in the wilderness, on the sea, among false brethren. And then he talks about labor and hardship, or weariness and painfulness, sleepless nights, hunger and thirst. All of these things were challenges that he endured, ways that he suffered for Christ. We can read of many of them in the book of Acts. But he gives this list, right? They want to speak as servants. I'm insane if I speak and compare that way. Here's all these things I've endured. But beyond these external or physical things, what else did Paul endure daily? Yeah. His concern for them, the pressures, the worry for the church, that his daily pressure, the concern for all the churches which he knew about. And so if Paul was forced to boast, in what would he boast? Yeah, in his weakness. If I have to boast, again, he's responding to this, asking them to put up with some foolishness, is if I have to boast, I'll boast of what pertains to my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, He who is blessed forever, knows that I am not lying. He talks about a scene here in Damascus. And so Paul, the first time he'd gone into Damascus breathing threats and murder as a Pharisee, as a Jew. That's how he was zealous in that. Then he describes the scene here later, and how does he leave Damascus this time? Yeah, he is there preaching the gospel. These persecutions begin, and the disciples then let him down on a wall in a basket. He escapes that persecution. So he can go on elsewhere and preach the gospel and face persecution there, but we see this here in Damascus. So why would it not be profitable for Paul to boast? Chapter 12, verse 1. He's doing it to make a point with these Jews, but ultimately it doesn't benefit anything. He says it's not profitable. And so he goes on to visions and revelations. So what happened to some man that Paul knew? Verse 2 to 4. Yeah. This man, he was caught up into the third heaven or paradise. He heard things that are not permitted for men to speak. He says, I won't boast of myself. I'll boast of this man. And so he boasts on behalf of them. Unlike his adversaries, what was the one thing Paul would boast of? Again. In regard to his weakness. So verse 5, on behalf of such a man I'll boast. He'll boast about this man he knew that was caught up in this in paradise. But of my own behalf I won't boast, except in regard to my weakness. He says that again here in relation to this thorn. So why was Paul given a thorn in the flesh? To keep from exalting himself because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations he'd received. And so he was given this to keep himself from exalting. He describes it as a messenger of Satan to torment him, to keep him from exalting himself. And so this is the thorn that Paul's given. Lord willing, on Wednesday night, we'll continue these questions and we'll conclude our book and have our review as well. So We'll talk about how Paul dealt with this thorn in the flesh. It was given for this reason, but we'll talk about how he dealt with it, and then we'll conclude our study of 2 Corinthians.